And what we realize is we can, we just have to adjust certain things. But it wasn't enough, the adjustments wasn't enough to take away such a big chunk of the experience where I'm like, this does not look like the lighthouse. This looks like Kentucky Fried Chicken. I mean, if it did, no offense to Kentucky Fried Chicken, but then I would just say, you know, it's just not
worth
our brand.
It. Yeah,
it's not worth it.
From Amaya Media, you're listening to Tales of the Trade. I'm Chirag Desai. And on today's episode, I'm joined by the founder of one of our partner companies, The Lighthouse, a restaurant and concept store based in the Dubai Design District, or D3. Our branded podcast team produces a show with them called The Lighthouse Conversations, which launched in November last year. So back in 2016, two banking execs, Hashim Muntasser and Hani Basuni, felt that Dubai was lacking a space where artists and creatives and maybe entrepreneurs could really come together. They were inspired by the Virginia Woolf book. Fun fact here, Hashim's mother actually did a thesis on the author. Now, Virginia Woolf was part of something called the Bloomsbury Group in London, which comprised artists and creatives who congregated over food and drink. And inspired by this idea, they decided not just to leave the corporate world, but also the world of finance and step into F&B, opening The Lighthouse in January 2017. Now, as is the case with this season, we're going to fast forward 3 years later. And in February of 2020, with a lockdown in Dubai imminent due to the rise in the number of COVID-19 cases, Hashim and Hani decided to close up even before Dubai went into an official lockdown. Now, they say they did this because they wanted to have more control over the closure and a chance to talk to their staff in person, which is where we're beginning today's conversation with Hashim. Because how do you talk to your staff amidst all this uncertainty? And what do you tell them?
So we rounded up the entire staff and basically told them that we're going to close as of tomorrow, which was, I think, 3 days before the official closure. And that the one promise we'll make to them is that we will reopen. And our main priority just going forward would be their health, well-being and safety. And for those that can come home, go home before the airport's shut, they should go home. And I think that was good. So we really had a very orderly wind down, so to speak. I mean, an operation like a restaurant and a store, there's a lot of pieces that go into it that have to be documented, inventory properly, etc. So we did all of that. So by the time the official shutdown happened, we were ready.
You mentioned that you told them that we're reassuring you that we will reopen. I mean, I'm curious how confident you were.
100%. Or was it? That's a very good question. Look, I felt very strongly that we had to reassure them that we have their backs, which was essentially the idea. So that, you know, we are not going to abandon them in the middle of this. Of course, no one knew. There are things outside of our control. But we would not ourselves come up, unless we're forced to, with the idea that, you know what, this is not working. A, because it was working. Two, we knew our position. I mean, we knew our position financially, commercially. We knew the brand was working. So I had a high degree of confidence. And I felt that they needed reassurance from us directly.
And this was a conversation you had with Hani that
yes,
we are going to reassure them in this manner.
Yes, 100%. And you could see people were trying to make eye contact and connect and see, to your point exactly, did you mean it? Is it just something you were saying? And we really meant it. Now, I think we understood that there were things that could be completely out of our control. But by and large, if the world at some point will go back to some normalcy, we will be part of that. We may have to adapt, but we'll reopen. And I think that was a very important reassurance. And the other thing that we did is once we sent everybody home, some went, actually left the country before they closed the airports. Some stayed in Dubai. We made sure to provide, you know, obviously beyond, they were staying in our accommodation anyway. We provided them with food on a monthly basis, staples for them to be able to kind of cook for themselves, of course, their healthcare, etc. So we also made sure that during that period, they are well taken care of. That's very important because at the end of the day, you know, you are as good as your team.
With this graceful closure of the space out of the way, the focus shifted back to the founders and on what was to be done as Dubai headed into a 24-hour lockdown.
You know, you got more worried because we had to start thinking about how do you stem any cash bleed that's key to the business like ours and most businesses, in fact. Because the key was once we reopen, we then have to be fairly aggressive in repositioning ourselves, getting our market share back, etc. And you have to invest in that. So if you're going to bleed sort of to death, so to speak, during the closure period, by the time you've reopened, you don't have the resources to do it. And that meant that we had to do a very, very detailed exercise of going line by line through all our cost items and saying, this can stay, this cannot stay, this can stay, this is a luxury, this we shut off. I mean, literally down to, do we keep internet in our offices or not? No, no one's going to the office. So, you know, cut do for the next 2 months. That's going to right. save you X, et cetera, et cetera. Do we need AC? Well, you do need AC. You don't need AC because there's no one there, but you do, or the furniture might go bad. So we had to really go line item by line item, which was very painful, but very necessary. And again, that was sort of step two. But then step three, which is what we get to, is, okay, all of this is done. You've done all the right steps now. And now you might be sitting at home for a week or two or three or four. And how do you even put a positive spin on this? We don't even spin positive face to staff members and members of the community that are looking to you for some kind of guidance. And no one knew.
One of the things I found personally was kind of just keeping myself motivated. We were entering Ramadan in the summer, which is already a slow phase in this part of the world anyway, in terms of business. And now that's coupled by the fact that already we would be grasping at straws and suddenly now those straws aren't there, right? What was that like for you? Because, you know, you're an active person, you like to be involved, you like to have conversations, you like to... And now suddenly we're sitting in a space where you're just home.
It required a complete reorientation. So I started putting together a routine at home to keep my mind active. And to the extent that I could stay physically active as well, although that was more of a challenge. But I managed to do a little bit of both. But certainly, and that routine was included time with my family, time with the children who were doing e-learning. So we had a whole different challenge at home of taking turns with the children. So 2 times a week, I was looking after the 2 children in terms of their e-learning, which essentially took all day. And then the 3 other days during the week, I would have time to myself, or my wife takes over. And I started structuring it as if I am going to work and creating kind of at least pockets where I feel I've accomplished something. Because to me, that feeling of helplessness comes from the fact that I'm not getting anything done.
Yeah.
But also after a while, I realized that there is a little, that process is also a little forced. So you kind of just let go. And it was very difficult and painful, but also allowed me to reflect. A few things came out of that, which I'm trying to keep doing now that we're back into a situation where a little bit closer to normal. I realized that, for example, I operate a lot better if I create pockets of tranquility, so to speak, in my week. In other words, I don't need to be physically present, let's say, here every day. I could be here, I need to be here and want to be here a couple of times a week, but it's not bad to give myself a day or two where I do other things. And those other things are work-related, but they don't necessarily mean writing an email or you know, working on something that's directly related to the lighthouse. It could be just reading. It could be listening to a podcast. And that free association brings up ideas that actually help my business potentially even more longer term than that particular task. So that is something that I kind of started adopting during the lockdown and I'm trying to keep for now. I think the second thing is to, for someone who, like myself, who is a bit of a perfectionist and can be a little bit of a kind of wanting to control the outcomes, you just have to let go and trust people around you as well. And I have a very high level of trust in the small team that I work with because they're highly effective. But it gave me an added impetus and encouragement to say, you know what, I do not need to micromanage this process. They've done it. They've done it very well. I'll give some guiding points and then leave the rest to them. And in fact, even if what comes out is not exactly what I want, that's okay because that's the way they're going to learn. If I try to footnote it and micromanage it, it might come out as I think it should. And this, by the way, may not be the best outcome. But the next time, they're going to repeat the same mistake again.
So, what you're saying is that your entrepreneurial style kind of shifted as well in this process?
A little bit, right? Because there are things you can't control. So, you have to rely on others to help you. And, you know, when you're obviously physically present, it's easier to sit down and explain and write down and mark. If you can't do that, you sort of have to be like, well, you know, I need to trust that person. And I realized that in 9 out of 10 times, that actually is the right thing. And in fact, I realized even more that in some cases, their version is probably more effective than mine. It's in my kind of worldview, so to speak, do I think that's the best version. And that's a process. I mean, that's an evolution, especially when you are running a relatively young business. I think 10, 15 years into a business is a different story.
You know, when you as an entrepreneur are already dealing, or you're mentally low, let's call it that, did you do something in particular to look at, can I keep my team motivated? Especially when they're also not working, but yeah. I can't tell them much more about anything because I don't
yeah,
have
it was difficult.
Yet.
I mean, look, we stayed in touch with them throughout. We had a number of Zoom calls. Obviously, as I said earlier, we sponsored them for accommodation. So on a monthly basis, there would be kind of a short meeting because we would organize all the food for everybody. So everybody would kind of meet and kind of get a chance to chat. So we were checking in, but it was difficult. And we had to, in many cases, tell them for a period of time, trust me. Which, you know, is difficult, right? I mean, yeah. But, you know, and you could say, well, didn't have a choice. Maybe true. But, you know, they all came back. Everyone's here. Everyone is in good spirits. So part of the humbling experience, especially when you're an F&B type business, is you have to remember, I mean, if you're going through something, they are going through probably even more. In that sense, many of them, you know, their salaries are used to provide for their families, and their families are not even here. They may be at home. Again, I go back to this point that we were reassuring them that we would reopen, but I didn't try to hide vulnerability. So when we had our call, we were sober about the situation we're in, that it's difficult, that we are doing our best to try to get everybody back to work. We don't know when. And one of the things we've done, and I think that turned out to be a good thing, is pre-summer, we told everyone, we don't expect to be back before September. Yeah. So we set up the expectation from the beginning, because I said, if places are reopening elsewhere in the world, and some of those guys that worked with us, who we love, but find another opportunity, they should feel free to go grab it. And I think that helped, because at least it set the mental kind of the state of mind, as opposed to kind of, you know, when are we opening? When are we opening? Oh, maybe next week, maybe next month. We didn't want to do that. I think when we do speak to a larger team, try to really not BS them. You know, we try to give them comfort, but to a large extent, bring them into the picture, as opposed to kind of trying to create this, you know, like larger than life figure of everything will be okay. And no, that's just not, that's misleading them.
And to your point about trust, I mean, when you say that, like, there were times when you just had to say, trust me, something like that would work if you've built trust with them.
Correct.
3 years before that.
Correct.
Or when since you've opened, as opposed to, you know, an environment where, and you do have a lot of these environments, and a lot of them exist in F&B, where it is very cutthroat.
100%. And rumor fueled. You know, you had that period where everybody's sort of trying to speculate who's opening, who's not opening. And, you know, we didn't open with everyone else, and there was immediately rumors, or you know, so you have to deal with a lot of that.
Yeah,
100%.
Yeah. Having a co-founder is an important aspect of being an entrepreneur, especially when you have a co-founder and the relationship between the two of you. Has your relationship changed in the last 6 months under COVID? Have you noticed a change in the way you and Hani kind of work
Sure.
through some of the stuff?
Look, I think the point you made earlier, we made at the beginning in passing, but I think it's a very important one, is that the reality of it is we knew each other for over 10 years and worked with each other for over 10 years before we started The Lighthouse. That level of trust, I think, it's not something you create overnight. And therefore, when we were kind of distant in the sense of a physical distance, at least, it really didn't feel like one. I mean, I think we have enough understanding of each other's needs and personalities to be able to work as effectively without the daily communication, physical communication. I was very lucky in that sense. There were days where I was feeling down and he was feeling down. We probably expressed it very differently. But how do you try to kind of support each other without being dishonest? Because I could call him up and be like, hey, you know, everything's going to be great. Don't worry about it. He knows that's not the case. So how do we have a dialogue that's also not in person, where we are clearly identifying some of the vulnerabilities that we have as a business, but also as people, but give ourselves enough support and confidence to keep going.
And I think that's, again, the reason I mentioned the difference pre-COVID versus after is typically in a situation where you have a co-founder pre-COVID is one of you can help bounce the other off to be like, hey, you know, don't worry about this or that. Or why don't I take it over if you're feeling stressed about it, etc.
Yeah.
Whereas we're living in a world where both people could be down at the exact same time for an extended period
of time.
There
was a couple of weeks, as I mentioned, at the depth of the summer that I think both of us were not in great shape and probably unable to lift each other up. And probably the communication dipped a bit. Not because of anything, but I think because neither of us wants to offload that kind of negative energy on the other. But I think it was understood. Again, it's one of these things in relationships where, because we know each other well, I didn't wake up and think, oh, I haven't heard from Hani in 3 days. Where is he? I understood that he's probably trying to find his own coping mechanism. So was I. And therefore, he didn't want to just call me and sort of, you know, like offload that. And I think we were both lucky that we have kind of personality that is resilient enough to then being able to say, you know what, okay, well, now we're out of this, let's really pick it up and muster the energy to do it right.
Knowing you as someone that likes to think through things, right? I mean, was that thought just this kind of feeling in the background to be like, today I'm, for example, I'm only 90% sure, not 100% sure? Or was it something you actually thought through to say, okay, what if?
The same way we did the closure, I really wanted to make sure that a decision to reopen or not would not in any way be impulsive. For myself, for my employees, for my shareholders. So we really thought it through. I kind of started looking at the pros and cons and walked a number of people that I trust, including obviously my partners in the business and my shareholders and my board and a few trusted friends through the pros and cons. But the question did come to my mind at that point, sort of being like, one, can we reopen? And then secondly, even if we can, I mean, are we just going against the grain and just to do it while really every other indication is telling you this is not a good idea because it's going to be too difficult, because no one will come, because of social distancing? Because, I mean, there are so many limitations to reopening restaurants that we were well aware of. So that period was very, very difficult. And it was a couple of weeks where I would sometimes in the morning kind of wake up and thinking, I don't really have anything to look forward to and I don't want to live with this thought again. And I've thought it through enough, but I'm not able to make a decision and I want it to go away. So that was not fun.
Okay, so spoiler alert. The Lighthouse did reopen at the end of August. And we'll tell you how a couple of unifying factors helped bring it all together for them right after this very short break. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Courtney Brandt, and I'm happy to share that a new season of CSR of One, a podcast and social initiative, is live in your favorite podcast player. On each episode, we talk to individuals who are putting their weight behind philanthropic initiatives outside of their chosen careers. From responding to the demands of the community during COVID-19 to realizing a sustainable dream, our guests are truly inspiring. You can find the third season of CSR of One in your favorite podcast players, and we'd love it if you gave us a review on Apple Podcasts or IMDb for the episode or episodes you enjoyed the most. We can't wait to share these inspirational conversations with you and hear your feedback.
Welcome back. You are listening to Tales of the Trade from Amaya Media. I'm Chirag Desai. Now, as Dubai started to ease some of the restrictions in July, many restaurants made a dash to reopen and try to recapture their lost clientele. But over the Lighthouse, Hashim Muntasser and his co-founder, Hani Basuni, took a slightly different approach. As you heard Hashim say earlier, the quiet confidence with which they reassured their staff came from knowing their position as a business and having a longer-term plan that went beyond survival. But it also hinged on this critical component that they'd been building every day since they opened.
I knew, and I was very confident, that we had a brand that resonated with people. I knew that the product we have is high quality, but I also knew that F&B, which is at the core of our business and our brand, was going to be very challenging over the next couple of months, potentially years.
Well, F&B and physical spacing, correct. Events, so, or retail. That's
exactly right. Yeah. So all three of them will have a lot of challenges going forward. So the question became, you can't just try to be a superhero and saying, well, I'm just going to reopen, screw everybody. If every sign is telling you those businesses cannot exist as they did. So we did a couple of things. I mean, one was, very luckily, we had started the process of streamlining the business, bringing technology in, to our business in terms of everything from ordering to inventory management to all of it, way, way before this happened. It started a year ago. So we accelerated during COVID, during the lockdown.
But that digitization that you're talking about that started a year ago, what was the motivation behind that? Was it just to modernize your operation? Or was
it an understanding that we did not come from the F&B business. And the way we found that what the way people run it is very old-fashioned and they're prone to human error and prone to waste and therefore prone to higher costs. So the way I looked at it was essentially all of the above. You know, if you have someone doing physical inventory management, if your HR systems are not tied, if your order management system is not tied to your kitchen, not tied to inventory, all of those things, you have more errors, slower process, more costs.
And more leakages in the
and
chain,
and way more
right?
leakages, and a lot more human input that's unnecessary. So also mindshare for Hany and I and everybody working there. So we said, surely there's better ways to do this. Why is everybody still sort of running around doing it in this archaic way? And when we explored it, we found options. So that was, I think, very important because when COVID happened, those conversations weren't new. It was a matter of really accelerating them. But you had to look at the rest of the business. I mean, in a business that's traditionally, anyway, a very competitive business, do you have enough, frankly, you know, margin here for error to restart the business, even at a lower cost, and make it successful in the long term? And that was really, at the end of the day, people, as I said earlier, give you different views. And I think it's very important to get different views. But you had to sit with, I had to sit with myself and with Hany at the end and say, do we believe that we can or cannot? And if the answer was not, that was a different story. But the answer was yes, we can. We have enough here. We can control the environment, external environment, 100%. But there were signals that coming from the government and so on that they want to reopen and help us as much as they can. So yes, there are challenges. There's social distancing. There are obviously events, as you said, are still today not back on. You have to be a lot more careful in terms of hygiene, all of those elements. But there is a path. And if your brand is strong, if anything, more people might gravitate towards you because they trust you. They trust that you have a protocol in terms of hygiene. They trust the quality of what you're offering them. They trust the steps you've taken. They trust your team. So you can turn that big, big negative into a positive. And that was number two. Number three, because our brand is so experiential, we felt, had to ask the question, can we create that experience again? And what we realized is we just have to adjust certain things. But it wasn't enough, the adjustments wasn't enough to take away such a big chunk of the experience where I'm like, this does not look like the Lighthouse. This looks like Kentucky Fried Chicken. I mean, if it did, no offense to Kentucky Fried Chicken, but then I would just say, you know, it's just not
worth
our brand.
It.
Yeah, it's not worth it.
One of the things I noticed as well during the last few months is you made a very intentional shift to digital. The word double down is probably overused, but the podcast was one element of saying, you know, we're going to keep that going because you want to continue to connect. I'm also talking things like social media to say, look, let's keep connecting with our audience through these channels. Let's remind them of the fact that they had connected with this brand at some point.
100%.
I mean, if you see some of the, and I'm just going by, let's say, looking at your Instagram and the way the content was being written and diverted, it was very clear that there was a strategy there.
Again, I think because we never thought of the Lighthouse as purely a restaurant, we always felt we were multifaceted. It's more of a lifestyle brand. So let's keep talking to people and use the channels that are available to us, the podcast being a very important one. But retail was also physically closed, but online. So we were shipping gifts and products that from our concept store to people all over the world during that period. The strategy was deliberate, you are right, but felt like continuation of what we're doing. I mean, if you would have looked at our feed pre-COVID, the feed was not 7 days a week food. So I think if it was, and all of a sudden the feed turns into podcasts, that's weird. So there was no transition per se. It was just doubling down on the channels that remain available to us. That's a huge advantage compared to others. Delivery had been optimized, and we had our own direct delivery channel. I mean, we use aggregators like Deliveroo, but also Chatfood, which was a direct channel for us. that was there pre-COVID. So when we reopened, that was immediately activated. We didn't have to create now an online channel for food delivery. So the fact that all of these pieces had been thought through, I think, helped immensely. The fact that we never thought of it as a kind of mono, what do you say, you know, like one-dimensional, one-trick pony helped a lot. And I think for our audience and followers not to feel like, oh, they're trying to be something they're not. Because authenticity, as I know that word is overused, but it's very important, right?
Do you see a shift or an increase maybe in terms of the interaction you got?
I don't know about the increase, but certainly a very steady flow. And certainly as we came closer to reopening, we saw a huge surge in interest. So other restaurants started opening. We had a massive kind of reach out that we got online.
When are you guys opening?
When are you reopening? And that was very flattering. Yeah. And in some ways, I don't want to say helped our decision, but I think gave us that feeling that, you know what? It's not just that they want to just, you know, eat the burrata, as we say, but, you know, they want to, like, you know, interact with it in many different ways. So, yes, that was very helpful and very encouraging.
So it's interesting that you say that when you got those responses, your reaction was, okay, that's a good sign. You didn't feel under pressure that, man, like,
yeah,
I don't know
question.
If...
Look, during the kind of, like, the depth of the closure, you do think sometimes, I mean, how much of this is in your head versus what is reality, right? Whenever you start a business, I mean, I think that's always the case. And hence, you always need to get a lot of customer feedback. So, that was very encouraging. I didn't feel the pressure, funnily enough. We really felt very gratified and very blessed that this brand, despite the closure of almost 6 months, remains relevant to people. So as you said earlier, yes, having an ongoing dialogue via podcast and other means was helpful. But does not assure you that when you reopen, you remain relevant. Especially when you reopen in the office district, which is our first location here, where many people did not come back to work. And at the end of the day, it's a bit of a toss-up, and you either say it's a go. We think we have enough that gives us confidence that we reopen and come what may, not just put all our resources into a successful reopening, but in fact double down, to use one of your favorite expressions, and make really sure it thrives from here. Because, again, people are going to gravitate towards quality. And if we have the means, both digital and physical, for those channels to be really active and support each other, so that's something that, as I said, we had worked on pre-COVID, this is the time to do it.
When you reopen, because we talked about how you felt personally through this journey and getting to the point of reopening, was that reopening the exhilarated excitement that it was, or were you still nervous at that stage to be like, look, we've reopened, we've made all the decisions, we've gotten here, but now what is the reaction going to really look like?
You know, I mean, I think my personality is one that probably, I mean, unfortunately, probably. So I'm the kind of person, if you write me a note with 5 points and 4 are glowingly positive and 1 is negative, I will dwell on the negative. In fact, I will very quickly read the 4 positive ones, probably ignore them at least at the beginning, and then call you up and say, upset in a kind of constructive way, why did you think so? And I will, so it's that kind of personality where, unfortunately, there's a little bit of catastrophic thinking, which, I mean, I probably need therapy for that, but that's a different story. So my first sense, because of that, was a sense of relief. It was not necessarily kind of a hoopla of cathartic jubilation and partying. But the relief was coupled with, honestly, I'm not just saying that, a lot of gratitude that, A, we were able to do it despite difficult circumstances, that the team came together the way they did, that the quality felt to me as good, if not better. But that sort of way of thinking has a positive and negatives. I mean, the positive is you're constantly working on your kind of shortcomings and weaknesses as a person and as a business, because it's a reflection of you in some ways. The negatives is it's not very often that you pat yourself on the back. And that's something that you kind of have to learn. And I'm going kind of a little bit deeper into a bit more psychology, but I think it's important. I had to kind of learn a little bit the art of, let's call it self-care, or being a little bit kinder to yourself. It's not my natural instinct. And that's an ongoing battle. And something that I learned is not just crucial to do in terms of, also kind of learning to pat yourself on the back, but really helps your overall happiness on a daily basis. If not, you're just kind of like this person that may be high achieving, right?
Right.
And doing good things, but just not very happy. And that's not a very good feeling.
Now, you remember how Hashem mentioned that it was about the long-term play? That when you come back from an extreme situation like the one we've just witnessed, you want to do it from a position of strength. I want to talk now a little bit about what's next, particularly because you have decided to open a secondary location.
So it's something that was in the works pre-COVID and has been in the works for about a year and a half. But again, like everything else, we take our time. So this is a bit similar to the technology point. We've put in all the effort, but we did it slowly and surely. But by the time we had to turn it on or accelerate it, that was easy because all the thought had already been put in place. Second location was similar. We've looked at a lot of locations, both in Dubai, outside of Dubai, etc. I've read a lot of scenarios in terms of what model we need, what concept, etc. And we obviously had to take a very long and hard look post-COVID. But again, we are, unlike many other brands, where, you know, by the time even the second location would come online, would have been 4 years. So we really took our time. Part of it was COVID, sure. Threw in a wrench there. But you know, we did not rush into anything. And I mean, one of my main principles in running your own business is anything worthwhile really takes time. And therefore, don't rush it. And what gave me a lot of gratification is I felt that throughout those three and a half years, we really did stay very close to what we thought at the beginning the brand would be about. We did not stray too far away, although we've evolved the business model, but the core values of the brand have remained the same. So this is a time to kind of expand and double down and build on strength. Having said that, we're well aware that there will be lots of bumps across, along the way. I mean, it's a very bumpy road. And anyone who is an entrepreneur, and especially someone who is involved in F&B, and anyone in the world right now, you would be a fool to think that this is going to be like just a straight up, you know, kind of...
Yeah, everybody's going to come back out and suddenly your business is going
to
boom,
this is
right?
going
yeah,
to be painful. There's going to be some setbacks. We're going to probably make some painful decisions. There will be probably days we're going to regret it. But our decisions are made on enough data and thought that we feel is the right thing. We don't doubt that, but we're cognizant that it's not going to be a straight path.
What would be your advice to an entrepreneur who might not still feel confident enough as to what's happening?
Look, I think my advice would be you need to examine your business in a non-emotional way. In other words, really look at the guts of your business or the business that you have in mind and say, will it stand up in a post-COVID world or not? And if it doesn't, doesn't mean you don't open a business. It just means you have to really think about pivoting and changing it. So two mistakes that I see a lot. One is you had an existing business that was probably doing okay, but not great. Now there are headwinds and you refuse to accept the reality and try to run it as before. That's going to be very difficult. The second option is that people feel their business has to be 100% digital. That's a myth. I don't think that's the case. Many, many businesses have and will do very well in the post-COVID world that are not 100% digital. But you need to understand that an online presence, digital adaptation is part of life now and was probably part of life for a very long time, which many people hadn't really realized. So, you know, you and I discussed this in a couple of our episodes on my show. You know, when you see someone like Walmart interested in buying TikTok, you know, I mean, like Walmart is kind of the epitome of the physical store, correct. And TikTok is the epitome of the opposite. Yeah. That tells you something about where the world is heading. So I would say just look at the business and some things don't change. A good business model, if it's good, it will stand the test of time. But don't be afraid to make changes. And the second maybe piece of advice would be reach out to as many people as you can. Again, it's a very lonely business and building businesses in isolation, especially in a very changing world, is not a great idea.
No, it's not. That was the advice I got many years ago. Go out on your own. That's good. You can do it, etc. But remember that it's stupid lonely.
Yeah, it is.
It was my former mentor and someone I look up to. And it wasn't like he said, don't do it. It was 100%. Just like, be prepared for it. And it took me a couple of years before I realized, like, oh, this is what he meant. You know, when you're sitting there by yourself needing to make a decision and there's nobody to refer to anymore. You're at the end of the chain now. You've done all the analysis. You've spoken to all the people. And now you got to make a call that affects not just your business, but potentially
others. Yeah. And or if things are not going well, you feel a sense of shame as if you failed people. And I think when you start reaching out to others,
it feels very personal.
Yeah. You realize that many others are going through the same thing and can help you with practical solutions and that it's not personal. But until you talk to someone, you'll probably feel a very heavy burden that you are letting people down. So I 100% agree with you.
The Lighthouse is located in the Dubai Design District. And if you want to learn more about some of the behind-the-scenes considerations Hashem and Hani made when shutting down, as well as planning their reopening, you can find it on episode 13 of the podcast, The Lighthouse Conversations. There's a link in the show notes, as well as one for the piece Hashem published as they reopened, aptly titled How to Take Over the World, One Burrata at a Time. This episode of Tales of the Trade was hosted by me, Chirag Desai, with production support from Zainab Ujjaini and Abhishek Venkatasubramanian. We'd love to know what you thought of the episode and our current season. You can connect with us on Instagram at talesofthe.trade. And we'd love it if you left us a review on Apple Podcasts, IMDb, or Podchaser. Those links are in the show notes as well. Tales of the Trade is part of the Amaya Media Network. You can find out more at amaya.media. We'll see you in 2 weeks.